Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Time to go blitzing round the Beltway. We got two teams to cover. The Capitals got another win last night. You just heard Pete talking about it there. Got a big goal from Lars Eller, 37 saves from Philip Grubauer as they revenged an early season loss to the Canucks. Also want to talk Redskins, so let's get to it. Let's talk some football. Craig Hoffman is our Redskins beat reporter, so we'll kick off the blitz with him. Craig, Jamison Crowder is apparently open to an extension. The two sides are beginning to talk about getting some kind of deal to keep him in Washington done going into the final year of his deal. Seems like a good time for the Redskins to talk with him as well, because rather than breaking out for 100 catches or something like that, he's struggled a little bit this year.
Yeah, definitely. You always want to negotiate as much as you can from a position of power, and the Redskins are probably going to have as much power over Crowder now as they would at any point, unless he just has an injury-plagued season again. He definitely was bothered by those hamstring injuries last year, the hip injury, and he just wasn't himself. And not to mention, his value as a punt returner couldn't possibly get any lower, because if it gets any lower, he's going to get benched in that regard. So now that he's kind of solidified himself, is clearly a very, very good player, but is coming off what was a down year. I think it's a great time, and it's also the logical time with him going into the final year of his deal that you'd want to negotiate an extension no matter what the cost was, is a guy that's reliable and you want on your, as a part of your team moving forward. So it makes sense that this is happening now. I would think that they probably push to get something done, and I think there's probably interest on both sides because as a third-round pick, you know, he's not a guy that as a later-round pick, he's not a guy that's making a ton of money on his rookie deal. So to get to that second contract and get that signed is something that's beneficial for his side as well.
Craig, we're going to talk about this later on in the program. Cousins discussed with us last Friday the wide receiver spot, saying it's a work in progress. How do you think, and A, do you think they need to upgrade, find somebody, et cetera, whether it's rookie, free agent, et cetera? A, do you think they need to upgrade? B, how should they go about it? Should they draft somebody fairly high, or should they go get a veteran where you feel like you know what you're getting?
Yeah, I think that both routes are possible. I think you explore what you can do in free agency. And you know, I think that if you say you like Allen Robinson or you like Jarvis Landry or you really like one of those guys in free agency, I think you do spend a little bit of money there potentially, but you don't necessarily go crazy. I think also there's a chance that where you're drafting at 13, Calvin Ridley from Alabama, for instance, could be available. And I think he's a guy that really fits into what they would need out of that position, a very sharp route runner with some high-end speed, some quick twitch ability, a really reliable, complete kind of receiver that would complement Josh Doctson well. Really, all you're trying to do is get it so that Doctson is one-on-one as often as possible, and you look at him as like a big play number two more than a reliable go-to number one. And I think if he's that, like, he's going to be one of the best ones of that in the league potentially, as long as he continues on the growth path that he's on. So it's definitely a position that I would love to see them upgrade at. I think it should be a priority for them, something that either they, whether it's via trade, like if I'm them, I'm kicking the tires on trying to get Deshaun back. Like, I would call Tampa and be like, hey, that guy's miserable. You want a sixth round pick? And we'll take them off your hands. Like, I would explore every single option to upgrade that position and see what they can find. I think it should be a priority.
What wouldn't you do in the first round, and what kind of pick would leave you scratching your head and disappointed?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think corner would make a whole lot of sense with the depth that you have. I think that if you love a defensive lineman, I think that you probably do go there. But considering you have Allen and Ioannidis, like, you have starters there, I think there are more pressing needs. Like, I think obviously at tight end, like, that's somewhere you want to go, but to go that high would be kind of crazy. I don't even know if there's a tight end that's considered that great of a prospect. I haven't done enough draft prep yet. But like, basically any position where you have an obvious and acceptable starter, as opposed to the positions where you feel like you need another guy and you need a guy at running back, you need a guy at wide receiver, you might need a middle linebacker depending on what you do with Foster and Brown and Compton and those guys. So I think when you're looking at round one, you need a guy who's going to come in and make an impact immediately. And so anywhere you have a starter already wouldn't make a whole lot of sense.
Craig, let's do a hypothetical here. Let's say the Redskins front office was a good, functional, coherent, smart front office, right? Let's just say for the sake of argument.
Man, you really are funny, aren't you?
Yes, thank you very much. Let's just say that they were good at what they did. Is there somebody that us on the outside going, man, they got a hole here, that they go, wait until you see this? In other words, a guy waiting in the wings that they think is going to step up to a bigger role, and they'd be right. You follow me?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I think they like Fabian Moreau a lot. Obviously, they drafted him in the third round last year, but I think there'll be an open competition between him and Dunbar. I don't know how much of a surprise that is, though, because Moreau's a guy that, you know, a lot of people said if he was healthy, he could have been a first-round pick, potentially. You know, I think they love Monte Nicholson, and I think that's smart because I love Monte Nicholson, too. But it's a matter of, you know, I think that from the outside, if he winds up just being hurt all the time, they're going to get you guys can go, you know, what were you thinking? Like, he was hurt in college. He's been hurt in his rookie year. Why did you ever think of relying on Monte Nicholson and pass up on, you know, some safety that you really liked in the draft, and that turns out to be a stud that goes at pick 14 or something like that. So I don't think there's like an obvious answer where they're, you know, like last year they were all aboard the Rob Kelly train. I think they're going to look at running back this year. So I don't necessarily know if there's a guy like that. I think it's just some of their younger players that they really anticipate being able to grow in the future that they drafted, knowing that there was a little bit of risk involved. And I think probably you include Josh Doctson in that too. Like, they're still super high on Doctson, probably higher than obviously some in the fan base are.
At Craig Hoffman on Twitter. Thank you, buddy. We appreciate it.
Yeah, you got it, guys.
See you, pal.
Let's talk some puck. Neil Greenberg of the Washington Post covers the Capitals, not only for that publication, but you can watch him with me pregame, postgame tomorrow on NBC Sports Washington. He'll be on Faceoff and Overtime with myself and Courtney Lachlan. Neil, I want to start with last night. 3-1 win over the Vancouver Canucks. Goals from Carlson, Eller, Kuznetsov. 37 saves from Philip Grubauer. I know you had a great piece about the metrics kind of not being in the favor of the Capitals keeping this up, but points in 18 of 21, wins in now 6 in a row. This team is rolling.
Yeah, metrics. I mean, this team has really ascended to the top of the Metropolitan Division and are getting wins when they need to get wins. They're getting standing points when they need to get standing points. And even after you adjust their scoring margin for strength of schedule, they're the fourth best team in the East behind Tampa Bay, Boston, and Toronto. That's pretty heady company considering where they were, 2 months ago when they were having injury and depth concerns. So, yeah, completely different team, and they're getting the timely goals when they need them. So they're getting the wins, and they're moving up in the standings.
6:30 p.m. tonight, Tom Daly, Neil Greenberg. We'll chop it up on Crashing the Net. Neil, I read something about Tom Wilson kind of being the line soothsayer, where if a line is scuffing a little bit, they just inject Mr. Happy, a.k.a. Tommy Wilson, to kind of get everybody going. How is he doing that? And kind of talk about that phenomenon a bit.
Yeah, so it's really weird. When he gets put on a line, the puck possession numbers and some of the goal scoring numbers go up a little bit. My guess is because he's able to create space. He's able to use his physical presence to battle in the corners, to park himself in front of the net. And also, you know, he's got some gifts, right? I mean, he was a first round pick for a reason. And I think last night we saw he was arguably one of the best players on the ice. I'm not sure that there was a shift that he played that wasn't solid and really does a lot. And it doesn't matter at this point if he's playing with the top six players or if he's on the third line or the fourth line. He's doing what the coaches are asking him to do. Personally, I like to see him kind of stay in the top six if that's where he's going to be to get him enough reps with those type of players. But, you know, Barry Trotz is using him as he thinks is best to use him, and right now it's hard to argue with the results.
On that second line, 15 combined shots. He had a game and a career-high 6. Jacob Varana had 6, and then you had 3 shots from Evgeny Kuznetsov, who I mentioned scored as well. He has become the fixer, as we like to call him, last night. Pretty much wherever he goes, that line gets better, at least in the short term, which is a good sign. Next on the horizon for the Capitals, back-to-back games against the same opponent, home and home, Thursday and Friday, D.C., and then in Carolina against the Hurricanes. Kind of a weird back-to-back, but this is going to be kind of fun, and Carolina's frisky.
Yeah, Carolina's actually also been playing pretty well over the past couple games. They lost 5-4 against the the Lightning last night. But again, the Lightning is one of the best teams in the NHL, so to be able to hang with them offensively is certainly nothing to sneeze at. And they got a couple players. I mean, Teuvo Teravainen has 11 points in his last 10 games. They can get some production from the blue line and Justin Falk. He's got 3 goals, 3 assists in the past 10 games. So this is a team that can score on you, and they're as Courtney likes to say, a blue-collar team. They can grind you into the ground as well. So Washington is going to need their top six to be the best players on the ice, but they'll also probably need some secondary scoring from the bottom six guys as well.
Quickly, Neil, John Carlson, is he playing the best hockey of his career at this point?
He certainly looks like it. I mean, he's scoring, he's playing a ton of minutes, and he's carrying that defensive core, especially during the early part of the season. In my opinion, he's probably a fringe Norris candidate. If he gets some better defensive numbers, I think he'll get more in the conversation as the season goes on. But, yeah, I mean, I certainly think that we're seeing the best John Carlson. And for him, it's good timing because he's a free agent. For Washington as a franchise, maybe not so much because they'll probably have to dig into their pockets a little bit deeper if they want to keep him.
Yeah, and today we'll find out. Looks like could be an all-star, as Neil points out. He's having a heck of a year. Thanks, buddy. Good catching up with you.
Sure. See you guys later.
See you, yes, bud. You will. Neil Greenberg of the Washington Post on Grant and Danny. We have not really looked ahead to this weekend's playoff action in the NFL, so we could do that next with some of the overs, unders, odds that came out. But also we'll go around the league. A lot of news to get to from the next on Grant and Danny. Around the NFL we go. What better place to start than with the remaining teams? 8 in action, 4 games this weekend. Couple of the lines and percentages that came out. Falcons, Eagles, right now the home 1 seed. Philadelphia, underdogs. We've mentioned a couple times this week. This is the first time in league history this has happened in round 2 of the playoffs. Philly is +3. 77% of the public is betting on Atlanta. Some of the other particulars here, game 2 on Saturday, Titans at the Patriots. Tennessee is now +14, but I thought this was a little bit surprising. 30% of the public is picking Tennessee.
To cover, not to win,
right.
To cover, obviously.
But I still think that number is kind of high. Now, maybe it's just that the spread is that big, I'm not sure. Jags, Steelers, and Pittsburgh, day 1. Game on Sunday, +7.5 Jacksonville. This is the most competitive game in terms of odds. 43% of the public thinks Jacksonville, with those 7.5 points, does cover. And then you got the Saints and the Vikings. New Orleans, +4 on the road, taking on Minneapolis's Minnesota Vikings. 58% are taking the underdogs, the Saints, to cover in that game.
Because I rarely, it's not like I bet all the time. I'm not a Valdez or a Jason or anybody like that. But when I do, if I'm going to take
a road, Skippy.
Yeah, I'm not a Skippy. If I'm a road dog, or if I'm taking a road dog, it's because I think they can win outright. I try not to mess around, especially in the playoffs, with somebody like a Tennessee, for example, who I think there's blowout potential. I think New Orleans can absolutely, and may, win the football game. I might even pick them. So if that's the case, I could definitely see myself doing that.
Let's get to the rest of the storylines in the NFL. There are a lot of non-playoff items to cover. Most notably, the Browns continuing to reshape their front office, hiring Elliot Wolf as the assistant to the general manager. Former Packers executive will come in. He is going to work in a restructured front office under general manager John Dorsey, who would run the Kansas City Chiefs. I actually really like what they are doing. Alonzo Highsmith recently made a move from the Packers to the Browns as well.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the most respected scouts in football. That was the first guy Scott McLuhan called to try to bring to Washington after he became a GM. He wasn't allowed to. But you got Dorsey, who ran the Chiefs pretty well. Wolf, who did a good job in Green Bay, obviously great bloodlines. And then Alonzo Highsmith. They're reshaping that front office. For the moment, they still have, at the top of this thing as the team president, the Paul DePodesta analytics chapter that he runs. I don't know how he's going to fit in with all these guys, but I know that the Browns are building the best front office they have in a while.
So it's interesting. A couple notes on this. Green Bay, once Elliot Wolf, at one point was the internal favorite to replace Ted Thompson, who's moved on to a different role in the organization, but lost the job to a guy whose name I can't pronounce. I think it's Gutkunst or something to that effect. He got the GM job over some protestations, I would say, from some. So once Elliot Wolf didn't get that gig, he said, fine, I'm out of here. The Cleveland Browns now have a better front office structure than do the Washington Redskins. I just want that on record. Who knows if it'll translate to wins or not, but they're doing the thing that I have begged the Redskins to do since Dan Snyder took over. You hire the guy that did it in another organization, or at least was in the room while it was happening, the Grant Paulson terminology, the sous chef. You hire a couple sous chefs, and you make beautiful dishes together. That's the idea. That's the plan anyway. So they're done that in a good regard, I would say. Moving on as well, some other coaching maneuvers and machinations around the place. This is good. Remember Eric Bieniemy? I'm old enough to remember him as the player.
I do.
Eric Bieniemy was a great Chris Berman. Eric sleeping with Bieniemy. Yep, yep, yep. Remember all that? He moves up from the running backs coach to now the offensive coordinator. That is good on a number of levels. Continuity there for the Kansas City Chiefs after Matt Nagy now becomes the head coach of the Chicago Bears. But Bieniemy, your new OC in KC.
Speaking of OCs, Steve Sarkisian was kind of enemy of the state number one for Falcons fans for much of this year. Now they're one win away from the NFC Championship game. He's drawing interest from other teams, believe it or not.
Can you imagine?
I don't get this because Atlanta has great players and has underachieved a little bit offensively all year. But it should be noted, the team that's interested in him is the Seahawks. Of course, he and Pete Carroll have a pretty good relationship. A couple of former USC guys. Jason LaConfora of CBS Sports is saying many expect Falcons OC Steve Sarkisian to end up as the Seahawks offensive coordinator.
Wow.
Speaking of the Seahawks and why that job is open, they fired Daryl Bevel. This was a little bit surprising. 48-year-old, a lot of heat in the past. Remember going back to the Super Bowl and he didn't call a couple run plays at the goal line. Rushing offense completely came apart at the seams this year in 2017. No more Marshawn Lynch to lean on. One rushing touchdown from a running back all season.
Amazing.
And clearly Pete Carroll is just not okay with that. Russell Wilson put up big numbers and kind of saved the day. But they had more talent than they put up numbers and performance. So Daryl Bevel, after seven seasons at the controls, out as the OC in Seattle.
A lot of people thought that Gus Bradley, who's always like that name, he's always mentioned, after the Chargers this year, by the way, had a terrific defense. I don't want to say they overachieved because they've invested heavily in the Bosas and the Ingrams, and that was one of those sneaky good defenses out there in the AFC West. They're retaining Gus Bradley. That's kind of a big deal for some continuity there with head coach Anthony Lynn trying to recover or trying to build on some of that second half success for a team that finished over 500 finally. Had they not gotten off to that terrible start, that was a playoff team. We saw them firsthand here in Washington. They were pretty damn good at times this year. Gave New England one of the best games of the second half of the season. That group is good. Gus Bradley coming back is a good deal for the Chargers.
Some more coaching news for you. Chicago, as you know, hired Matt Nagy, the offensive coordinator from the Chiefs, who just took over as play caller for Manny Reid about halfway through the season. He's their new head coach to come work with Mitchell Trubisky. The big question was, he did not have a defensive coordinator as his planned Robin to his Batman already.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big hire. Who are you going to hire to run a defense as a young guy, as a first-time head coach? Well, they may stay in-house with Vic Fangio, who I actually think is a great DC.
He's good, man. Chicago was sneaky okay on defense.
They were. He did a heck of a job in San Francisco, and he probably actually did a better coaching job in terms of what he worked with the Bears. So they had a couple of options that they liked, but a lot of those guys are finding other jobs or aren't becoming available. And with the news now of Mike Pettine, who apparently was of interest to them, likely ending up in Green Bay, more on that in a second, it means that Fangio could be the best of their options. So do not be surprised. The report via Ian Rappaport of NFL Network is that Fangio probably stays on as the DC. Speaking of Pettine, to Green Bay he goes. This is the former Cleveland Browns head coach. ESPN's Adam Schefter is saying that the Packers are preparing to hire him as their defensive coordinator. Remember, he cut his teeth initially working his way up the ranks on Rex Ryan's staff with the Jets, eventually became the defensive coordinator there. His defense has had plenty of talent over the years, and it's not like he's not going to a defense with a bunch of that. Mike Daniels on the defensive line is great. Clay Matthews at outside linebacker, still strong. Kenny Clark, a defensive tackle, is underrated. Ha-ha Clinton Dix at safety, among the premium players he would get to work with. But he needs to really work some magic with that secondary. At cornerback, they are a mess. He's been more of a front seven thought of guy. So I'd be intrigued to see who he would bring on as his secondary coach.
My favorite job, if I was out there and looking for a head coaching spot, is the Arizona Cardinals. Because here's what you got. An involved but not obnoxious owner, right, who wants to empower the players. You've got a front office structure that is stable and sound and coherent. And they've got good plans, and they find guys like David Johnson. And, oh, by the way, David Johnson's coming back. I like the Arizona Cardinals situation. I think them and the Rams may be jockeying. Seattle's kind of on the fall. Pete Carroll's act is kind of wearing a little bit thin. I like that job an awful lot. They're interviewing people from all over the sport. Jim Schwartz interviewed John DeFilippo. I don't know what it is. It's like Ryan Phillippe. He is the Eagles quarterback's coach, now getting a lot of credit for developing Carson Wentz. They're going to interview Steve Wilks, defensive coordinator of Carolina. They put in interview requests for guys all over the place. Whoever ends up getting that gig, I think, will have a chance to succeed. You'll get to pick your quarterback, get time to thrive and succeed. I like that job a lot.
That's a great job. I'll give you another excellent job, although you'll make less money because there's less power. The offensive coordinating role of the Carolina Panthers.
Dude.
They blew out some coaches. They've got a vacancy. And NFL.com's Ian Rappaport is saying former Redskins coach Norville Eugene Turner could be back.
You might laugh at me. I think that is a perfect fit.
It is. Absolutely is. He's good. They got players. They got a good offense. Charlotte Observer reporting Panthers likely interested in Turner just hours after Mike Shula got fired. Rap Sheets report calls him a top choice for them. Remember, the last time he had an OC job, he walked away.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
From the Minnesota Vikings in season. That was a really strange deal.
It was odd, wasn't it?
We didn't know if he got fired or not, and it turned out he just wanted to leave, supposedly. But he would come back to coach Carolina. You come back, you get Cam Newton. You get a matchup nightmare in Greg Olsen at tight end. You get another matchup fiasco for a defensive coordinator in Christian McCaffrey. You got a pretty good running game with a solid offensive line with some guys locked up for the long term. Basically, you are adding receiver help away from having an elite offense.
Yeah, if I'm dialing up what does Norville Eugene Turner need for his offense, it's pass catching, running back, tight end that's a matchup problem. Everything else is gravy. He will get the most out of that group, I think.
Ryan Tannehill update. Will he be ready for the start of the offseason? What about Nick Saban's thoughts on jumping back to the NFL? Interesting conversation he had with reporters. And an update on DeMarco Murray. Is he going to play this weekend, or will it be the Derrick Henry show for the Titans against the Patriots when we continue breaking down the NFL on Grant and Danny next? Grant and Danny welcoming you back as we continue our trek around the NFL. Lots to cover, a lot of moving and shaking happening on coaching staffs around the country. Player news, Ryan Tannehill's going to be ready for OTAs for the Miami Dolphins. This is via the Herald in Miami. They're saying the expectation is that Tannehill will be ready for the start of the offseason program in April. He's roughly 5 months removed from partially tearing his left ACL undergoing surgery. Crazy to think he's going to be full go at OTAs. That was not the original expectation. But they're saying he'll be 100% for training camp. He'll be ready for the start of the season. Jay Cutler ultimately is going to look like a one-year rental, I'd have to imagine.
You'd hope so.
And you wouldn't put them into the quarterback market. There was some speculation as recently as a handful of weeks ago. They might be one of the teams in that Kirk Cousins, Case Keenum kind of sweepstakes. That's no longer expected because the five-month recovery has gone very well for Tannehill.
I'm going to do a jigsaw bit here. I want to play a game. Let's see if you'll play with me. Fired coaches, among these coaches, let's play yes or no. Do they ever get a head coaching gig again? Because they'll be around the league. They'll be somebody's OC, your special teams guy, or special assistant to the assistant, to the regional secretary, whatever, right? Does this guy coach the NFL again? Is he a head coach? John Fox, Chicago Bears.
No.
I got no as well. Jim Caldwell, Detroit Lions.
Yes.
I've got yes too, and I don't know why. I don't know why I've got a yes. He was fine. He's very fine, right? Isn't that just kind of the feeling you have?
I think he's a really likable guy. He was asked what I may be saying the wrong question, but I think this is what it was. Like, what's his favorite movie or Christmas movie or something? And he's like, I'm not going to answer that. Like, he doesn't offend anyone. He never says anything that's going to right. move the needle in any way.
Two straight 9-7 seasons. It's not like they're terrible.
No, I think he'll probably get another job.
Chuck Pagano.
No.
That's a big fat no for me. Ben McAdoo.
Zero chance.
Big fat sweaty no for me. This is the one I will debate. I think someone will turn to this guy again. He's like the McRib. We're basically, we don't know what else to do, so we bring the McRib back. Jack Del Rio, Oakland Raiders.
I think he will, because he did a good job in Oakland, and a lot of people feel like he shouldn't have been fired.
He's Reggie recycled. He's
I think
the
that's
ultimate...
easy to sell, to be honest with you.
Is it?
Yeah, he comes in, you go, look what he did in Oakland. He actually improved that team. They were fringe playoff team, and when they have success this coming year after taking a step back, I think people will like the job he did even more, probably. I think he gets a job.
I do, too, and that's the end of your list. He, to me, is the ultimate, like, well, we can't find the young superstar. We can't find the next big thing. We'll be fine with Jack Del Rio. That's kind of the guy I feel like they turn to.
This came out about 10 minutes ago. We were talking earlier about the Seahawks moving on from their offensive coordinator. They may also be moving on from their defensive coordinator.
Whoa.
They might be making wholesale changes on their staff, which is kind of stunning. Softy Maller, who does what we do out in Seattle, he is one of their talk show hosts on 950 KJR, is reporting that he's heard that Chris Richard is going to be out as the Seahawks DC. That would be pretty stunning. The Bevel news, not nearly as fascinating as Richard, who's 38, who's a riser in the coaching ranks. This is the same guy that interviewed for the Bills and Colts head coaching jobs over the last couple of off seasons. Ian Rappaport, NFL Network, says Pete Carroll believes Richard, who's been with Carroll the entire time that he's been in Seattle, would benefit from experiencing something new, whatever that means. Richard is going to be a DC really soon somewhere.
Interesting.
Maybe in Washington, by the way.
Oh, hello.
I wouldn't dislike that.
Yeah, that would be one of those things where I would nod my head in an improving kind of way. So we know the Seth Wickersham story. It breaks Friday morning, of course, as you and I are getting ready to talk to Kirk Cousins for a couple hours. And that story chronicles a falling out or a hurt feelings, whatever you want to call it, between Kraft, Belichick, and Brady. Well, now you get into the second layer of that story, which is people either confirming, denying, moving on from, kind of whatever. Bill Belichick had his say.
More denying than confirming.
Yeah, probably more of that than the confirmation. But Tom Brady had some quotes on WEEI where he said, I think this is a poor characterization. In 18 years, I have never celebrated when someone has been traded, been cut. I would say that this is disappointing to hear that someone would express that or a writer would express that, because it is so far from what my beliefs are about my teammates. And I think I'm very empathetic about other people's experiences. I know those situations aren't easy. So the Seth Wickersham piece, if you recall, basically says Brady and his camp have agitated for this. Belichick had agitated in the past for a, we need to get ready to move on from Brady. I'm not trading Garoppolo because that's who I'm going to move on from Brady to. Then Robert Kraft siding with Brady, quote unquote, not unlike Dan Snyder siding with Robert Griffin over Shanahan, although it's not exactly the same situation. And ultimately, they trade Jimmy Garoppolo for way less than they could have gotten at other times, including to the Cleveland Browns this year, including to times over the past offseason, etc. The next occurrence, when Seth Wickersham is around, the first meeting between Tom Brady and Robert Kraft, they're hugging like reunion classmates that haven't seen each other in 20 years in front of a slew of Brady's teammates, almost, it seemed, celebrating the fact that Garoppolo was gone. Ding dong, the witch is dead.
They might also have just seen each other for the first time in a few days. Those guys really like each other.
Could have just been very happy to see each other.
They really have a tight relationship, owner and player. Kind of weird if you're one of the other players, probably.
Bit weird.
Nick Saban is not interested in the New York Giants, according to the New York Post. Now, they may have moved on to Matt Patricia after he said no, as we found out today. But this is an annual thing at this point, pretty. Normally, when the Giants have a head coaching vacancy, apparently they kick the tires on Saban, and he tells them, keep on moving down the line. He doesn't seem to be interested at all, based on his answers, on coming to the league. He seems to enjoy college football. We had the quote we played yesterday after the national final where he talked about being able to improve these young people's lives and try to help them as young men. And I don't know if he's just saying that because it's the right thing to say or if that's how he actually feels, but he has never been interested in going back to the NFL. Here's my question to you, though, Danny. Mm. If he got a John Gruden offer, 10 years and $100 million, and I'm not saying he's worth that because what he's doing in college, being replicated and duplicated in the NFL when you can't just recruit all the best players, is impossible. But let's just say an owner decided that would be the way to sell to the fan base that we're about to go win a title, is we're bringing Nick Saban to the league.
Right.
And he got the 10-year, $100 million offer, say, this offseason from, pick a team.
Say the Chargers, as they're trying to ingratiate themselves in L.A.
I'll take that. Would he go? I bet you he would.
I think he would.
How do you say no to that? Because for years, everyone said John Gruden wasn't ever going to go back.
But then 10 and 100
happens. Enjoying
broadcasting.
It was too easy. It was too fun. All of a sudden, 10 and 100 happened.
And I think there's a hubris to these guys. I really do. Because you know what they said about Patino. You know what they'd say about John Calipari. You know what they'd say about Nick Saban. Everybody, you can't win unless your guys are better than the other guys. You ain't smart enough. You ain't good enough. And there's that nagging feeling down in their core.
That Matt Nagying feeling.
They've got that Charles Nagy type feeling. They have to prove that to somebody else. Instead of just being so content to keep this well-oiled machine going, where it doesn't matter who your assistant coaches are, they move on every other year, you are back in the national title game. 70% of the time they have it.
Speaking of Saban, there is a college football rule that is in the news based on something happening this week that I cannot stand, and I know you can't either.
Correct.
We'll get into it next. 1 o'clock, we're going to be joined today by our buddy Matt Bowen, one of our favorite guests. We will preview all of the playoff games this weekend. About 17 minutes from now, you'll want to hear that. You're listening to Grant and Danny. One o'clock on Grant and Danny, 13 minutes from right now. We will welcome Matt Bowen onto the show. If you haven't heard Matt on the show before, you're going to want to check that out. He is just a really smart analyst when it comes to the NFL, and we'll preview all things playoff weekend with him. Jacob Eason is transferring to Washington. He is the quarterback at Georgia who was originally one of their top recruits, supposed to have been the guy to take them to a national championship. They've now been to a national final with him on the bench because he got hurt in week one this year. And he was replaced by Jake Fromm, a true freshman. And Fromm played so well that Georgia never looked back and didn't go back to Eason. So his season ended with him having thrown 7 passes, completing 4 of them. When he played last year, it was a mixed bag. He was himself a freshman. He has a rocket arm. He 13 games, completed about 55% of his passes, 16 touchdowns, 8 picks. But he did not play at the level of Fromm. So Fromm is their guy. Kirby Smart is going to roll with the kid that took him to the national title, and Jacob Eason is going to transfer. He's going to leave that school. So he's going to Washington to be a Husky. He lost his job, and still, when he goes to Washington, has to sit out a year. I think this is ridiculous, and I understand why this rule is in place. You are offering kids scholarships. You're committing to them, and if you allow college kids to hop around school to school, like they're NFL free agents, they're going to use that possibility, and it's going to be bad for the product in college football. It's going to be bad for their educations. It's going to be bad for the idea that they're actually going to get degrees. It's going to be bad, I think, all the way around for everyone. Just like, you know, the high school rules have gotten kind of shady now, where if you notice, there's like high school powerhouses that basically recruit, where they got kids coming in for a year or two at a time. It's kind of a strange thing at that level. So I am for making kids who want to leave a commitment where they told a team, yeah, I'll be there for 4 years, don't worry. If you want to leave, you got to sit out of here. I get why you do it. I think you need to extend the number of guys this doesn't hinder, though. If I am benched and now there's another guy better than me and I don't get to play anymore, I should be able to transfer without consequence, without having to sit out a year. There should be some type of hearing where each of these situations is its own entity. Jacob Eason is either going to no longer get to play football or go to Washington. Don't make him sit out a year. This isn't his choice to leave. He's not leaving because he's not loyal to Georgia. He's leaving because he needs to go play so he can become an NFL quarterback at some point.
Yeah, I disagree with the first part of what you said. Nobody should have to sit out. It's a rule for coaches and convenience. Coaches can change. Do coaches have to sit out a year when they make money and players don't? Before players get paid, and by the way, it's the easy cherry pick thing to say. Everyone loves to say players should get paid. No, they shouldn't. It's, you don't understand if you just go to that. You're not a hero. You actually haven't looked at the information. But let me go to this. Players should have way more rights. And that's what Northwestern's unionizing, or at least attempt to do so, was really
about.
This is what is the first thing that they should be allowed to do, is transfer as they see fit. So everybody can come up with a reason. Academically, it's not the right fit for me. I'm too far from home. I got a family member that's sick. Well, then you start making exception after exception after exception. Players should be allowed free movement because they can be dumped. Scholarships aren't guaranteed. Scholarships can be taken away at the coach's discretion. A new coach comes in, you're allowed to transfer. That's the only time. Players should have way more rights than they do. If you start guaranteeing scholarships for 4 years, when a coach makes the kind of commitment that they love to talk about honor, integrity, and part of the family and everything else that goes on with these pitches, if you're going to guarantee a scholarship for 4 years, then we could start talking about restricting player movement. But until then, where players have very little rights and recourse if they get hurt, A lot of times,
you can't
restrict future earnings.
Scholarship based on performance.
Sure, you can. Coaches in most places can take away scholarships for whatever reason they want.
Does that happen? I've never heard of that. Like a wide receiver at Georgia isn't producing, and they just no longer give him a scholarship. I have not heard of that.
It never gets publicized because it's not sexy.
That happens.
It happens constantly. I guarantee you. It's the type. It happened at my little Podunk baseball program at GW. A guy wasn't doing what he was supposed to do, so they finally.
But was he acting a fool, or was he not? No, I'm saying I know scholarships get taken away when guys act like clowns off the field.
It wasn't like he was arrested or anything.
Okay, but I'm saying if you're not a problem child and you didn't do anything to lose your scholarship other than you're not performing on the field, I think that that's messed up.
I definitely do too. But coaches can do it if they want to. Now it's become less of
So you'd allow a guy to just hop around year to year like a free agent?
Absolutely.
I wouldn't do that. First of all, what is the point of college athletics? You know how hard it is to graduate when you go school to school
and
transfer credits and things?
Of course I do.
To me, you're allowing the player at that point to you're making it way more about football. And I'm not naive enough to say that it's not already about football for a lot of these guys. But if the point is to get an education, I think that would just be a bad look. I'm willing, though, to basically every single time anyone transfers, a panel hears that. And if it's reasonable, let's just use common sense. If you're just transferring because you're not happy there or something like that, we could talk about why you're not happy.
Well, so, I mean, the list of exceptions and the red tape would be impossible to deal with at that point. I just think you allow free transferring and you know, you'd hope for commitments from guys. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. There are a million reasons why it doesn't work for somebody. You go and you thought you're going to be a starter, and then you weren't. You get benched for one game, 10 games, 5 games. Are you not running the system that you thought you were going to run? How far do you take that? For me, you allow players to have the same freedom that coaches do. The reason this rule came into place was because coaches were bitching and moaning that, well, I recruit a guy and he wants to leave. You're punishing guys instead of allowing them the freedom that everybody else has. And that's what I want. I don't want to restrict college players at all. It's a bargain. I keep saying bargain. I wish there was a better word for it, but
say bargain again.
It's something that you basically figure out. Is it worth guys at Alabama sitting for 2 years, then getting their 1 year of being a starter, then turning into a first round pick? Saban's able to convince most guys that it is. Some places it's not worth it to you. Some places, again, it all kind of depends. If
my
you love
buddy
the university.
Just texted me, said he got his scholarship reduced for hitting after he hit 180 in college baseball 1 year. He said it knocked down from 80% to 40%.
Absolutely.
Next year he hit 333. I had no idea that was a thing. To be completely honest,
it's 100% a thing.
So. If that, I mean, to me, that changes how I feel about this. Because I would, first of all, get rid of that. If you give a guy a scholarship, it's a guaranteed scholarship for 4 years, like a contract commitment.
And a lot of schools now, depending on the sport, but will do that and will say as a way to stand out. So, in other words, if I had gone to, Clemson's a baseball power. They give everybody $50 to come on campus. They recruit, you know, they over-recruit. They've got more scholarships given out than they do spots on the roster. They do that because they know that they're going to get attrition. They're going to get guys that quit when they realize that they thought they were all everything and weren't and whatever else. I could have gone there and you know, been the 55th best freshman that year. Instead, I went to a place that made a commitment to me. Again, it's always a balance. What do you want to do and how do you want to do it? I would offer way more freedom to players before I even thought about paying them. This is the first thing that I would change. I hate it. It's so scummy. It's, again, because coaches were whiny, and that's why they enacted the rule.
The transferring, though, of Jacob Eason after he loses his job, meaning he has to go to Washington and not play for a year.
I hate it.
One of the worst rules in sports. I think it is completely, completely absurd and doesn't help the student, obviously, but I don't know why it helps any of the teams. To me, it needs to be changed tomorrow. It's awful. Matt Bowen will join us next. We can ask him about that. He played big-time college football at Iowa before playing in the NFL as a safety in Washington and in Green Bay. We'll also get his thoughts on the playoff games this weekend. Matt B next on Grant and Danny.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, There's joy in every journey.